And looks like it's time for another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Today is the 22nd of September. I am plenty pooped myself, so going to be playing a lot of interviews for you regarding the Benchlands, which got, again, a slice removed, the Phase 2 section, and that was last Monday on the 19th. And there's another section to be removed on the 27th, Phase 3. So the boys with the guillotine or the chopping block or the salami slicing machete are really active and moving at it. But we've got some witnesses to what happened and some commentary, and that's what you're going to be hearing a bunch of here this evening. So listen in. And also, if you're interested, there is a meeting tomorrow. If you're listening to this on the 22nd, it'll be the 23rd at 5:30 in the evening in the Benchlands. If you were at the last Benchlands meeting, it's pretty much at the same spot, except on the other side of the fence, since what was Phase 2 area has now been, shall we say, declared terra impassa, or you can't get into it. And so we're on the other side of it. You walk to the second stairway down into the Benchlands if you're walking from Water Street, or it's actually a stairway directly in front of your cement road, the road that adjoins the county building, between the county building and the lawn bowling area. And you walk down that stairway and you'll find this meeting at 5:30 on the 23rd, which would be tomorrow if you're listening to this on the 22nd. And there scheming going on about what's to be done to assist folks in Phase 3 demolition, which should be coming up in 3 days after that on the 27th. Or I guess it's 4 days. So listen in and see if you think you'd like to join and help, or at least come by to witness and see what your city taxpayer dollars are being spent on doing. You know, spending grass for human lives. That's the whole point, is to regrass Benchlands and kick people out without giving most of them a place to go.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Today is the, where are we? We're the 21st of September, about 3:30 more or less. I'm on the line with Rith Haney, who's an activist. I don't know, would you call yourself an activist, Rith?
I think so. I only recently got involved with the fight, but, you know, I'm doing what I can.
And the reason I got involved with you is I ran into you at a meeting of what I call the Benchlands Resistance at the Resource Center for Nonviolence last Monday, which I guess was the 19th or thereabouts. And it was a small meeting, smaller than many of the meetings we've had there in the Benchlands. And it was just after the same day's deadline for the eviction of folks from the Phase 2 area in the Benchlands.
Yeah.
And you were there for some of that eviction.
I was actually there all weekend, helping people move their stuff. And then I didn't think I was going to be able to be present on Monday because I had work. But my boss was an angel, let me off early so that I could go support my husband and our roommate and our friend who were also present.
So what period of time were you there for during the Monday situation?
On Monday, I think I arrived right around maybe 11:45-ish. My husband was there all day, so I'm sure that he has more information on the earlier portions of the day, but I had been getting text messages from him updating me. And then, yeah, I was able to get off work and got right over to the benchlands around 11:40. And at that time, I remember there was only about maybe 8 or maybe up to 10 other people helping out from the house community in the surrounding area. But we were still mostly just moving people. I immediately just got to picking up stuff, moving furniture, carrying things for folks, anything we could do to help.
And how many police did you see when you arrived, or were there police there?
Oh, there absolutely were. When I first arrived, they had not yet entered the Benchlands area. They were standing off to the side right behind the county building on that kind of path above the park. I have it in my photos and videos, but I didn't count at the time. There were maybe, I want to say, 5 to 7 large police vans, just the typical black and white, not the sheriff. And there were at least a dozen police officers, if not more. Some of them came and went. Some of them were talking to other citizens that were standing off to the side, I guess, observing. But when I had arrived, they hadn't yet come into the space.
Now, was this the Santa Cruz police deputies or from other jurisdictions?
I believe it was the Santa Cruz police. I'm looking at my photos now, and they all have Santa Cruz police on their badges.
And how many unhoused folks who were still struggling to get out of the Phase 2 area were there, still in that area?
At least, I want to say, 15 to 20. It's kind of hard to estimate just because, you know, some of them had already moved all their stuff the day prior. Some of them had moved in the hours before I arrived because I got there really close to the deadline. The deadline was 12 o'clock noon. So I got there right before the police were supposed to start coming in and sweeping. So, but there were still at least a good, 15 to 20 people still trying to collect up their belongings and move their stuff wherever they could.
What's your sense of where, because you were there not merely during that day, but you say on the weekend, the two previous days before?
Yes, I was. I was there basically all day, Saturday and Sunday. Helping out because I have a little Tacoma pickup truck, so I was there driving up and down, moving stuff in the back for folks, driving people wherever they needed to go.
Were the police present during any of those days?
Occasionally, they would drive by. None of them, while I was there, entered the Benchlands area, but we definitely had a couple of sheriffs even standing up at the same area that the police were on Monday, right above the Benchlands, I guess surveying. And even on Friday, I attended the meeting that was held by the, as you said, Benchlands, what do you call it, resistance?
Mm-hmm.
I attended the meeting there in the evening, and right as I was, I walked a friend out to his car parked at the county building, and the police watched us very closely as we walked away, and then as I came back, they started sweeping the perimeter of the county building for whatever reason.
How late did you stay on those 3 days?
On Saturday and Sunday, I was there definitely late, past daylight. I was there until maybe 7 or 8, and then on Monday, I was only there until maybe 2 or 3 o'clock, and then I spent the rest of my day, I, I took my husband home and my roommate, and then I returned to help out a couple folks that were left.
How about on Friday?
On Friday, I think I was only there until the meeting ended, if I recall. So I must have left. I think the meeting started around 5 or 5:30, so I must have been gone by 7-ish.
Any social service providers or political figures show up at any of those times when you were there that you recognize?
Not as far as I know. I've never been the most aware of political figures. I got into activism through my husband. He's been a lot more interested in this topic for a lot longer than me. But even then, the only people that I noticed at any of these meetings, at any of the on the weekend helping people, was a few folks, a few journalists, some people from the Tribune.
The People's Tribune, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's it. Everybody else was our people from, the Homeless Union or some people from the DSA and then the unhoused community there in the Benchlands.
Did Love Boat folks show up or anybody from the Homeless Persons Health Project or...
I'm not completely sure just because, I'm pretty new to all of it, but I know a couple of the folks that participate in Love Boat showed up on... Sunday, I believe. On Saturday, I made a distinct effort online on social media to reach out to anybody I knew to try to get their help on Sunday moving people and Sunday. We even did a lot of flyering on Sunday. One of the people helping us out made a beautiful flyer to let people know about Monday, about being present, because we wanted more of a presence on Monday.
Save a copy of it, if you can, for me.
What was that?
If you got an extra copy, I'd like to see one.
Yeah, I absolutely do.
I don't know if you know Joy Schindeldecker, who's running for... I guess she's running for some political office?
For mayor, yes. I have met her. And
did she show up?
I don't believe I saw her, but I don't... I'm not too great at remembering faces. I know that on Sunday, one of my friends who was present on Monday helping out was joining Joy on her, I think she had a walk of some kind. I can't remember what they called it, a rally or something like that.
I know she...
I had met Joy a month or so ago at a small event in downtown. She was a delight to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Now... You spent a number of your hours during the weekend helping people move their stuff, being around folks, keeping an eye on things. I'm wondering, what was your perception of, if you were to speculate where most of the people went, not necessarily their new campsite areas and in detail, but did they go to... I don't know, the Overlook? Did they go to the Armory? Did they go to downtown to pitch a tent in a doorway? Did they move?
As far as I know, most people that I helped move ended up, just trying to hole up with other friends in the Benchlands as best they could, which, was pretty difficult because the announcement for the eviction deadline were, I think they only started putting flyers up for it about a week out from the deadline. So kind of a lot to pick up all your stuff and find a new place to move in a week. So a lot of the folks just, ended up holding it up with friends. Some people had other locations they could go to, other areas in the county, which I helped them move their stuff there, because a lot of folks don't have vehicles of their own. But for the most part, a lot of people seem really lost and just desperately trying to find anywhere. I only heard of a couple people signing up for the Armory or the Overlook for various reasons.
How many people would you estimate were in the Phase 2 area before Well, I mean, you probably, there was, you, by the time you reached there, I imagine many people had left, or some people had left. But what was your sense of, what your estimate of the population, but when you first approached the Phase 2 area, whenever that was? I don't know whether, let's say on Friday, or if you were, were you there before?
I had been there, I think last week on Friday was the first time I had personally shown up to the Benchlands, in that Phase 2 area is where we had held our meeting. But my husband had been attending the meetings for a few weeks, and I asked him actually this question the other day. I said, how many people do you think, you know, there were in that section? And he let me know that the amount of people there on Friday when I attended was about the same as he had seen. You know, a lot of people, you know, either didn't even know about the sweeps or just were slow moving because it's a lot to pick up all your stuff. But I would say it's really hard to estimate, but at least 35 to 50, possibly even more people. I don't know how many people were completely, like, tented up there, like they were set up, but I know there was at least a lot of people with friends staying with them, a lot of people that would stay there temporarily. So it honestly could be anywhere from, I would say at least 35, but up to 50.
Yeah, it did seem a particularly large area, let's say, compared to Phase 1. Which
absolutely.
Were you around when Phase 1 was removed?
I was not present at the time, but I see when I went down there, I could see the area where Phase 1 had taken place. And you're completely right. I would say it's less than half the size of the Phase 2 area, and presumably Phase 3, etc., though I'm not exactly sure what the parameters going forward will be.
What was the reaction of folks deeper in the Benchlands who saw the influx of people coming from Phase 2?
I think a lot of people, some people seemed confused. I don't know how many folks were fully aware of Phase 2 since it was, again, only the second phase. Other folks, honestly, seemed really perturbed by it. There's a lot of internalized kind of disagreement.
And more on that after our mandatory musical recess. We'll be back to Rith and his experience soon. Don't go away.
Pack up all your cares and woes, social conscience, there it goes. You buy apartheid. Dispossession you pursue, cause you say the land's for you. You buy apartheid. You don't see the suffering of others. They'd all move away if you had your druthers. God gave you their water and land, that's why you buy Israeli brands. Apartheid, you'll buy. Bulls all their olive trees that they've grown for centuries. Bye-bye, natives. You were here before they were, now you're back, they must defer. Bye-bye, natives. International law can't understand you. And then that human rights stuff they all hand you. Though you've caused your brother's plight, somehow you can't sleep at night. Apartheid, you'll buy. Apartheid, you'll buy.
And that quickie was Bye Bye, B-U-Y-B-U-Y, Apartheid, from an album by Dave Lippmann, Boycott and Divestment Songs, Stop Israeli War Crimes, and U.S. Tax Dollars for Israel, Volume 1. And I got that one about 6 years ago, and I think it's, it was 2015, non-copyright is what it says on the CD. So more from Dave Lippmann, who we heard before, and you can actually hear his lyrics, which is always good news. And now back to Reith Harvey, or sorry, Reith Haney.
You know, that there was, I saw arguments about some people saying, oh, well, we keep it clean down here. You guys who are coming over need to keep it clean, and, like, we'll let you stay. Or, you know, the people in phase two saying similar things of, oh, well, you guys don't do this, but we do. So it was a lot of that. Some people were definitely pretty open. I know a lot of the folks in the phase two section had friends already further down in the park. So there was, you know, room, but there was a lot of difficulty initially finding spaces for people further down because of the matter of, you know, getting consent from everybody in a surrounding a space that it was okay for somebody to move in there.
Was there any attempted monitoring of this by Jeremy Leonard or the folks who have been, I guess he and his colleague have been kind of paid by the city to, quote, manage the benchlands, whatever that means. And I'm wondering, was he around much doing any kind of assistance or any kind of action?
I've never met him or seen his face, but as far as I could tell, no. And that's based on the fact that at least on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you know, everybody that I saw that was working with me in the Phase 2 area, we were very active speaking to the people in the community there, moving people around. We were very vigilant in case of any, you know, police presence or anything going weird or anything. And I made personal contact with every person that showed up. Some of them were my friends. Some of them were, you know, folks from different organizations that were just showing up, you know, to help out. But I spoke to, like, almost every single person that I saw. No, I'd say I spoke to every person that I saw helping out over this weekend. And I don't recall anybody by that name or any really, like,
Jeremy,
workers or politicians or anything like that.
Jeremy Leonard is a relatively tall fellow. He's over 6 feet tall. He's a fairly, I don't call him hulky, but he's a big guy. And I think he's blonde and he has long hair, or he did when I saw him last, I think, if I remember properly. You would probably have noticed it. How many people would you claim that you did talk to over the course of this 3-day period?
Yeah, I definitely don't think I saw him in that case. Well, on Friday, it was a pretty small meeting, and there was maybe 10 people there, some people coming in and out. Some of the folks that live there, you know, would show up for a little bit and then head out to, you know, whatever they were doing for the rest of their day. On Saturday, I don't really recall anybody being there besides me and my husband. I don't think we had any helpers. And then on Sunday, there was an extra 4 people, 4 folks, 4 wonderful people, that a couple of them were my friends, a couple of them were friends of friends that showed up and were a really, really big help on that day. And then Monday, it was maybe a dozen people total, maybe. That's a generous estimate.
How many people would you say, if you include the people in the benchlands or police officers that you spoke to, if you did, throughout this entire period, how many people in total did you talk to?
It's hard to estimate just because I've met so many people over the course of this weekend. It's been kind of a whirlwind, but a fun one. But I'd say it's been at least, including the folks in the benchlands, I've met at least a good 25 to 30 people this weekend that I didn't know prior.
So what was the deepest you went into the benchlands in your assistance expedition in your vehicle, or without your vehicle?
Personally, I walked all the way to the end once or twice while just helping search for spots. And while, you know, trying to locate people if I lost track of them at any point. Moving wise, my truck was only able to make it a small amount of the way. So I didn't, I maybe got in halfway while helping move folks. Because there definitely wasn't a lot of room. Definitely not enough for everybody that was in phase two. I was only able to help a few people actually move further in, I think, because of the inability to find more space.
Was there any attempt by anybody to say, you can't be here because you have to be a certain distance away, yada, 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 in that respect? And was there, or also, well, that was, think about that one first. Any sense of any of that happening?
Not at all for me personally. Everybody that I spoke to, I helped people ask folks, hey, is it okay if, you know, so-and-so moves in right here next to you? And everybody that I met was incredibly friendly. You know, people have, you know, their own rules. Like I said, some people were like, you know, just make sure to keep it clean and things like that. But everybody was really kind.
That's encouraging. How has this affected your interest in assisting the Phase 3 deadline that's coming up? What is it, next Monday? Or I guess it's next Tuesday, right?
Oh, my gosh, that's way too soon. Honestly, I'm so exhausted after this weekend just because, like I said, there were so few people that showed up.
Had you been doing this, let's say, 2 years ago? Probably not, because you said you just got introduced to this.
No, not at all. I was raised very sheltered. I had never met people that were in the unhoused community, and I had never met people with good opinions toward the unhoused community in my upbringing. So I only just recently even learned about these issues in the past couple years. I mean, I'm pretty young. I'm only 21. But then it was 100%. It was my husband and one of our friends that started actually volunteering and wanting to donate more. And I volunteered with Food Not Bombs last Thanksgiving. Spent, you know, half the day there handing out food to people. And ever since, I've been a little bit more involved. But this is definitely the most involved I've ever been.
So, but you're right now, you're thinking you might be, I guess my question is, what is your sense of how likely are people to return to assist in phase three? And I guess also some of the questions that came up at the meeting that Elise was throwing on Friday, which I didn't get to, which had to do with different alternatives for people. What did people mostly... what do you think people are mostly going to be interested in doing? And you don't really, may not know that, because I guess this phase three meeting is happening day after tomorrow, Friday at 5:30. That's what we talked about before at the resource center. But do you have any sense of Is there likely to be a different strategy, or is it pretty much a desperate do what you can at the moment and just sort of play it by ear?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be present for basically the entire meeting that happened on Monday. I only showed up for the last 10 minutes. But that being said, we've had a lot of the same talking points the last couple meetings. And if I had to wager, I'd say it's likely going to be a similar response. I'm not as involved as some other folks with, people like the organizations like the Homeless Union and the Love Boat, people in DSA and whatnot. But I, just based on the response that I got personally, a lot of people that I tried to reach out to weren't very interested. I had a few people that weren't able to make it on Monday, but were interested in donating. So I was able to provide them links to places like Food Not Bombs where they could donate you know, money or items that may be useful. But yeah, especially because a lot of the people, I don't think it's completely out there for me to say that a lot of the people that are interested in this movement and really care are people with disabilities. A lot of the people that were there to help out were disabled. So it's very difficult to physically show up sometimes and be somebody to move stuff. But I have a feeling, especially based on the amount of people in the Phase 3 area, I haven't seen physically if they've – I haven't been there since Monday. I've been trying to take a break. But I have a feeling, based on the size of Phase 2, that Phase 3 is going to be really tough on people based on the amount of people right past the fence where Phase 2 was. A lot of Phase 2 did just get shoved into Phase 3 area. So.
How far does the Phase 3 area extend? Do you have any sense of that?
I'm not sure. Based on estimates from being there, I have a feeling it's a similar amount of space as Phase 2. My guess so far is that they've been going staircase to staircase, since that's about the size of Phase 2 was basically a staircase to staircase amount of space.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't actually been down there since Monday.
Did you notice whether most of the people who had been evicted from Phase 2 that you saw around still had shelter in terms of tents, or were they sort of left on the ground?
It's definitely a mix. Some people were able to bring some of their items, like tents and, you know, tarps, canopies, whatever it may be. Some people were really only able to make it out with, like, a bag, if that, and were left doing whatever they could. Like I said, a lot of people have friends in the area already, so they were able to pull up with them. It was also an issue this last weekend. It was raining, and a lot of people's, you know, tents and tarps were damaged. Some people, I know their stuff was damaged in the Phase 1 sweeps, so there's a big lack of protection from the rain as well.
Wow. Well, is there any questions that you would ask yourself or any answers you'd want to give that aren't really covered by what I've talked about?
Well, gosh. I mean, I think it's important that – I think some of the things that I've learned this weekend are really important for people to hear. Because, like I said, I, growing up, never knew anybody that was in the unhoused community or that even had positive opinions of anybody in the unhoused community. So – really getting to know everybody this last weekend, getting to meet a lot of the folks living there, a lot of the folks involved in the movement, it was really powerful for me to experience, to see that, you know, a lot of the stereotypes said about these people really aren't true in a lot of ways. Like, a lot of the folks there are incredibly kind. They're very compassionate. It's a very tight-knit community. In some areas, and, you know, it is true that some people aren't able to get up and work hard and do things like that, but a lot of the people, even if they had, you know, various problems, they were just wonderful to meet and wonderful to be around. They're all really great.
Did you form any connections in the Benchlands and contacts that you're likely to continue?
Absolutely. I made a lot of friends this last weekend. A lot of wonderful, friendly people. And I've gotten as many phone numbers as I can for as many people that have phones. And I'm hoping that it isn't too much of a drain on my energy to keep helping these folks out.
Well, you know, let me end the recorded part of this interview here. After giving you the last word again, and then I got a couple of other things I wanted to ask you off mic.
Yeah, sure thing.
Anything else you want to say for general consumption?
the best things that I have to say is really just, you know, show up at the sweeps, at the meetings, whatever it is. Even if I've been trying to really let people know, you know, even if you don't have, you know, the money to donate, the physical ability to help move things, you know, even the time to be present more than 5 minutes, it's really important that the city and that the people that are pushing the fight against the unhoused community, you know, see that there are people in this county, in this wonderful local community that really do care about these folks and their well-being. And we haven't seen nearly as many faces and bodies as we would like to.
You're here. Okay, well, I'm going off mic here. Thank you. Again, we've been talking with
Riff Haney.
Thank you, Riff.
Of course. Thank you, Riff.
It's coming through the tears and angry shouts for Palestinians on the ground without a house. It's coming from the just who realize they must. Peace shall ever come for anyone. From the victims losing homes and white phosphorus still burning. From those children's broken bones, hopes of refugees returning. The boycott call is coming to Jerusalem. Coming right through the apartheid wall, through those of conscience and those who came and saw. On Arab streets and avenues, amongst the righteous Jews, even echoing through academic halls. It comes with every settler gang that Israel's letting loose. Every time they close the crossing and tighten up the noose, the boycott call is coming to Jerusalem. Call is coming to Jerusalem. Boycott call is coming to Jerusalem. Boycott call is coming.
And that's another one from Lippmann's Boycott and Divestment Songs, Volume 1. I think it features other singers, Zachariah Massoud, Sofian Massoud, and Aisha Hoda, Ellen Davidson, Hallie Hammer, and other folks on instruments. So more of that will be coming your way. Here's a story from the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which I sometimes jocularly call the urinal. It's Thursday, September 22nd, today actually, and it's a story kind of not entirely buried, but it's on page 7. Ex-cop Lane gets 3 years for role in George Floyd's death, by Amy Forlitti, AP. Minneapolis. A former Minneapolis police officer who was sentenced Wednesday to 3 years in prison for abetting and aiding manslaughter in the killing of George Floyd became angry when he erroneously thought he might have to register as a predatory offender, saying his role was, quote, minimal when compared to that of Derek Chauvin's. I got to register as a predatory offender? What the fuck is that? He actually said expletive, according to the AP. Tender of ear, you know. Thomas Lane, who pleaded guilty earlier this year to aiding and abetting second-degree manslaughter, said after his sentencing hearing. The hearing was held remotely by video, and Lane made the comment after the judge ended the proceeding, but before the video session ended. Lane added, "That's what Chauvin has to do. If I have a minimal role, why the fuck do I have to do that?" Lane's remarks were in response to the judge's instruction for Lane to register as a predatory offender, if required by law, quote-unquote, something legal experts told AP is fairly standard language in Minnesota criminal cases, but that neither Lane nor Chauvin would be required to do. Lane's attorney Earl Gray told his client he would look into the matter. Floyd, 46, who died in May 2020 after Chauvin, who is white, pinned him to the ground with a knee on Floyd's neck, as the black man repeatedly said he couldn't breathe. Lane, who is white, held down Floyd's legs. J. Alexander Kung, who is black, knelt on Floyd's back, and Tu Thao, who is Hmong American, kept bystanders from intervening during the 9.5-minute killing, which they called a 9.5-minute restraint. The killing, captured on bystander video, sparked protests as part of a worldwide reckoning over racial injustice. Lane is already serving a 2.5-year federal sentence after being convicted this year of violating Floyd's civil rights, and he appeared at Wednesday's hearing via video from the low-security federal prison camp in Littleton, Colorado. As part of his plea agreement in the state case, prosecutors dropped a more serious charge of aiding and abetting second-degree unintentional murder. They also said they would seek a sentence of 3 years and he could serve it at the same time as the federal one and in federal custody. That state sentence is below the sentencing guidelines that range between 41 and 57 months. Prips, my comment, special privileges for police officers. Prosecutor Matt Frank said Wednesday that a lower sentence was appropriate because Lane played a, quote, somewhat less culpable role in Floyd's death, adding, quote, there were moments when Mr. Lane tried to change what was going on that day. Lane had tried to de-escalate the situation and had suggested that the restraint of Floyd could be handled differently, Frank said. I'm not quite sure what he was referring to, but I didn't watch the trial. And the AP reporter apparently didn't think it was either noteworthy enough to mention or didn't bother to ask what particularly caused this prosecutor to think that he should receive a sentence below that of the sentencing guidelines of 41 to 57 months. Not that I'm a big fan of the sentencing guidelines, but I am definitely not a fan of police getting special privileges in these situations. Evidence from other trials, the story continues, and court documents shows that Lane twice asked Floyd if Floyd should be rolled onto his side, this was the specific, to ensure he could breathe. Still, Frank said, these steps do not relieve him of all responsibility. He could have shouted, stop right now, roll him on his side, you're killing him, man. Or, I'm concerned about this, take a break. Or, something. When Lane pleaded guilty in May, he admitted that he intentionally helped restrain Floyd in a way that he knew risked an unreasonable risk and caused his death. He admitted that he heard Floyd say he couldn't breathe, knew Floyd fell silent, had no pulse, and appeared to have lost consciousness. In accepting the plea deal on Wednesday, Judge Peter Lahilly told Lane, I think it was a very wise decision for you to accept responsibility and move on with your life. Cahill also acknowledged that the Floyd family has not been able to move on with theirs. And that's ex-cop Lane gets 3 years for role in George Floyd's death in the September 22nd Santa Cruz Sentinel. Some folks at these Benchland resistance meetings I've been going to, and I think I'm going to be playing at least some of one of them for you shortly, have suggested that people from the Benchlands, before they're completely ousted from the area and bust far away from, relatively far away from Santa Cruz, and to an area they will not be able to walk up to except through taking the prescribed transportation by the city, and yet told they're not really in jail, it just sort of feels that way, maybe. You know, to please the apprehensive, the nervous, and the vindictive, before they all get disappeared from the area next to the city offices, the county offices, and the city offices aren't too far away either, but the county building is right next to the Benchlands, as residents here who are familiar with that know. They could take the opportunity to march on up to old Robert Ratner's office. He's the Housing for Health Division Director who deals with the homeless slush funds. And here's a story about another slushy he got. Santa Cruz County accepts $10.7 million home key grant. Site leveling on Soquel property is slated to begin within weeks. A 30-unit development to house formerly homeless individuals is planned for three vacant parcels at 2838 Polk Avenue in Soquel. By Jessica York, who, as usual, I think she covers some things and doesn't cover others, but I will mention them briefly. Santa County leaders this week unanimously accepted a nearly $10.7 million state project home key grant for a high-profile, extremely low-income housing project. In the coming month, passers-by are expected to see construction begin on the three-story, 36-unit modular Park Haven Plaza apartment complex in 2838 Park Avenue in Soquel. Early effort will come in the form of site leveling, said Santa Cruz County Housing for Health Division Director Robert Ratner. Overall, he said, the project's estimated cost is around $20 million, so the award that we're getting from HomeKey is a piece of the puzzle, with some private financing that's also helping get the project up and running, Ratner told the Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors on Tuesday morning. With HomeKey, we anticipate that the project should be completed within a 12-month period. That's one of the standards of the HomeKey effort. With Housing Authority of the County of Santa Cruz voucher assistance, the housing project will be built for tenants who are at risk of being or are previously homeless, with a focus on veterans for 17 units, families for 4 units, and former foster care youth in 14 units. One additional unit will be set aside for a live-in site manager. State leaders first announced their plan to back the project HomeKey development in June. Second District Supervisor Zach Friend, former Police Department PR man and, I guess, creator of the protective policing plan, which he was, got sold to police departments all over the place. I was going to call it some sort of a snitch program, but it's actually a way of focusing on poverty districts as sources of crime or as places to station lots of cops. Or at least that is my ignorant statement. If somebody wishes to challenge it, I would like to hear it because I could always be educated better. And this predictive policing plan was developed a decade or more ago. And it's I tend to remember a Zach Friend from his smearing of the homeless people in 2007 at City Hall when they had a week-long protest demanding an end to laws criminalizing and unconstitutionally engaging in cruel and unusual punishment against homeless people in, you know, human rights and diversity-conscious Santa Cruz. That still goes on. And that's what I remember Friend hit for his comments about poo and pee. I don't know if he mentioned needles at that point. It wasn't a big selling point to rouse the hatred of the right-wing constituency that I suspect he relies upon. Continuing, Second District Supervisor Zach Friend pulled the grant acceptance item from the board's no-discussion consent agenda because he said it had broad community interest. In other words, he wanted people to have more opportunity to talk about it, which is a good thing. While located within unincorporated Soquel's borders and board chairperson Manu Koenig's district, the project sits adjacent to Aptos and Friend's jurisdiction, Friend said. The site sits near Highway 1 on and off ramps and a frontage road leading to Cabrillo College. Santa Cruz County will serve as a partner managing and distributing awarded funds. Friend asked what initial site preparation steps would be taken and how information would be communicated to neighboring residents. Ratner responded that the site preparation will include some basic grading, preferably within the coming weeks, in order to beat the raining season. Development partner Novan Development also has created a project website at parkhavenplaza.com, a resource Ratner said his staff would encourage Novan to keep updated. The County Housing for Health Division also has an email subscription newsletter for general updates at santacruzhumanservices.org/housingforhealth. Friend said he felt early and proactive outreach would be best to address community questions for what he said was a high-profile development. Letters sent to the board prior to Tuesday's meeting included several focused on how Park Haven Plaza would impact the nearby Lindsay Lane townhouses residents when it comes to fire and vehicle safety. A Willowbrook Lane resident and project supporter also asked that the county consider improving pedestrian and bicycle connections to Cabrillo College. Captos resident Becky Steinbruner called in to ask the board for information relating to the project's planned water use offsets, environmental protections in place during the site grading work, and specific impacts to the site's existing trees, but received no response. Only Novan Development President Imam Novan appeared in person at Tuesday's meeting to speak and make himself available for project questions. Friend said he was surprised not to see more public involvement. Perhaps he was expecting more hostility to the project, don't know, or more skepticism. I guess why I mentioned this whole story initially was that Ratner, it's been suggested by some, myself among them, that Robert Ratner, who probably has an office in the county building, perhaps be greeted with a deputation from the Santa Cruz benchlands, the San Lorenzo Park benchlands, I should say, which is being destroyed under his very eyes from his spacious fifth-floor office. I'm not sure how spacious it is, actually. And asked to account for how the funding has been spent of the various homeless funding and why there isn't some real funding in place for the broader homeless community in Santa Cruz that are currently living in tents across the city as well as in the benchlands. I think people should get their butts up to his office in mass while they still have a mass to move. But I've been kind of grumbling and groaning about that for some time. I'll probably continue to grumble and groan. This is a story, again, from the Santa Cruz County accepting $10.7 million home key grant in the September 22nd Sentinel. And I'm no opponent to funding home keys, to doing home key stuff for extremely low-income housing projects. I think that's fine. But it, in terms of the amount of people that need immediate and emergency assistance and extensive housing, these few projects indicate to me, and at the same time as these officials are saying nothing about the demolition of the housing that the homeless people themselves have lived in, created, and the communities they've created, watching it get destroyed so that folks can walk their dogs and frolic in the grass, pisses me off big time when I think about it. Or at least it makes me grumble. For this next song, you need to know that AIPAC, A-I-P-A-C, is an acronym for the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, a group that has had in the past and I think still has great power in creating, prior to Ukraine, the biggest foreign aid giveaway or grants, and of, in spite of the massive and ongoing human rights violations. And the song is called Hit the Road, AIPAC.
Hit the road, AIPAC, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, AIPAC, and don't you come back no more. Always siding with Israel, treating Palestine cruel. AIPAC don't play by the golden rule. You take the land and water away, but people are rising and we say, hit the road, AIPAC, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, AIPAC, and don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Keep using our
taxes funding Israel's abuse. It's time to cut the ties and let our policy loose. We'll say it nice and slow. It's time to pack your bags and go. That's right.
Hit the road, APAC.
Don't come back no more, no more, no more, no more.
Hit the road, APAC. Don't you come back no more.
Don't you come back no more. Don't you come back no more.
So I'm on the line with Elise, who's been pretty active. Well, she's been active for a long time, but recently has been struggling to take a more active role, and actually struggling. She's been taking a more active role, running meetings. And you were present, Elise, at the most recent Phase 2 demolition, and also at meetings by residents and activists in the community who are trying to work up some kind of response to this. How are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, today I should say this is several days after the demolition of Phase 2. Today is Thursday, the 22nd of September. And you were down there, I guess, several times during the weekend doing meetings, and then you were down there on Monday when the actual... Or was it Tuesday? Remind me. Then the demo. I think it was Monday, right?
When, it was Monday, yeah.
When the demolition occurred.
It was the 19th of September, just a few days ago.
Which was a week after the demolition of the first phase, and it involved about twice as many people. Is that accurate?
I wasn't there for the first phase demolition, Robert, but I would say it was a lot more people and tents in this segment of the camp.
Uh-huh. How was the public response in terms of folks coming down? I did speak a bit with people you suggested, some of your coworkers, Cece and was it Reef? I think his name was. I'm probably. You got it. And so I spoke with those guys, or however they identify themselves, and they had an interesting account. But I wanted to get your account because you've been, you know, probably with this cause at least as long as they have, if not longer. And you also have a historical perspective on some of this. But what are your just general impressions of how things went down on Monday when the demolition happened?
Yeah, I will say that. I will say I've been sometimes experiencing, sometimes researching and investigating the entire area of homelessness since roughly about 2005 in different cities, and so I've got some pretty deep, just experience and firsthand observation and research over the years with the arena of homelessness. And you asked me what I saw on Monday, right?
I did.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to say Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs had pointed out, just as an aside, that it was a beautiful camp. And so that was kind of ringing in my ears, so to speak, my mind, when I was down in the camp. Friday night, we had a meeting of the homeless union at about 5, I think, or it was 5:30. And then we had another one on Saturday preparing for the sweep. And then we had a brief check-in Sunday, and then Monday was the sweep. And, of course, there were a lot of other activities going and happening by organizers, like the group you mentioned. But what I just wanted to make sure I said was that what impressed me about the camp, and that by that I mean the benchlands, especially this segment that I was in, because it was in this second segment of the camp, and when I say segment, I'm referring to the city's fencing in of these residents in this section of the benchlands. It was beautiful. It was peaceful. It was home for these people. Their homes were reflected their personalities in different ways. Each tent, you know, home, if you will, because it's not just sometimes tents. It might be tarps and tents or those canopies where, you know, each one's a little different, reflecting the person inside or who this is. It was peaceful, and it was, as Keith said, beautiful. There was order. Obviously, there was some problems with getting their trash collected by the city, I believe.
And, of course, there was also a rainstorm happening, right?
Well, that didn't happen until Sunday, mm-hmm. but there was that, and fortunately, at least this first rain of the season, that's like not really maybe the first rain, but you know what I mean, it's like the first
big storm.
One of the first big showers we've had in months, and I thought it was just going to turn the whole place into mud, and so just as a point of the conditions, it did not. Yeah, there was some wetness, there was a few puddles, but we were fortunate. Monday morning was sunny, mm-hmm. and at that point, it turned into, I think, part of what was going on over the weekend was just preparation, reminding people that it was going to start raining on Sunday, letting them know that some, very few people had volunteered a truck. And so to get down, there weren't a lot of people who came to help. Some of the usual people like Mel Nunez showed up. Mel is older now. He's been supporting homeless people out of the kindness of his love for them and his heart for years. He was there. Keith actually wasn't able to be there. He was actually cooking that morning, and so he was not there. Alicia was at her job. She's the president of the homeless union. But so we had like a skeleton crew, and thanks to the work that Cece did, he put out like 250 flyers with Riff downtown and also up on campus. They put out some social media. There were a few people who showed up. Annika showed up, some woman named Sarah. Others, actually two people named Sarah. One actually had a truck on Sunday. So the amount and the number of helpers was not that many. I would say mostly maybe as many as 10. What help they provided was very strong. Cece and Riff and their family group of some others, Grayson and others, a woman named Nora, a person named Nora, I believe she identifies as a she, in terms of her pronouns. They were strong. I mean, we were just, and the homeless people themselves were maybe in some cases a little late, you might say, to get themselves really going, and that's another matter that I could talk about, but people got help. They were able to get their tents folded down. They were able to move down the line to other camp spots, wanted to move to other camps in different parks in different areas of the city. And so I would say that, you know, we may have lacked numbers, but there is trust that the union had built and affiliated groups like Huff and Food Not Bombs with the union, and also other people who are not particularly, like, aligned with the union, but looking at the outreach efforts on social media, the notifications and the flyers and so forth.
Now when did you
arrive? I just wanted to say one more word. The heroes of the day were definitely Cecil, who we call Cece, Riff, the homeless people themselves who are persisting in, you know, no matter what issues or problems they might have, no matter what challenges they face from the police, there is good spirits, there is a lot of camaraderie, and we were able to actually mostly help everybody.
That was more than a word. But let me ask you this. What was the period of time you were there for on the moving day?
I arrived at roughly probably about 10:05 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I had just seen the clock tower, you know, or maybe it was just before 10, but it was right around 10 a.m. And I only stayed till about roughly 3 o'clock, 2:45 or so, when I went down to Food Not problems to get a meal with a few of the veterans.
That's 5 hours.
Yeah, but it felt like way more because, you know, in working with people to really fold up their tents, to get their stuff out of the veterans, even if it only went up on the pass, you know, that bicycle path that's up there.
I do.
For a few minutes before they moved it to a different location. It was all moving. It was all working together. A few arguments broke out, mostly amidst couples, and I think mostly because of the stress and tension. But nothing went, like, haywire. Like, there was no... People were able to get work through their stress and move their belongings. And a lot of them went into the next segment, which is Section 3, which is probably going to get removed next Monday. But just overall, what I'm saying is for that time period, Robert, which was pretty small, like, a lot got done. And it was very hands-on. It was like...
Now, you were there... You were there during the Phase 1 movement, too, as I remember.
No, I really wasn't there that day. That was a week before.
Oh, okay.
I had to go to the Workforce Partnership in Capitola where I'm getting help conducting my job hunt. And, you know, like, I've been reluctant to give a lot of time because I'm fighting my own survival.
Right, now I was thinking of someone else, and what I wanted to get was some... The question I wanted to ask you, maybe you have some sense of this anyway, or maybe not, but was people from Phase 1 moved into the Phase 2 area, and some of them, as you and I both remember, because we were at the meetings where this was discussed, got hassled for being in the Phase 2 area, even though they hadn't been told to leave, even though Phase 2 had... wasn't supposed to leave until this last Monday. Now we have a situation where Phase 2 people have moved into Phase 3 areas, and to some extent that's what I understand happened. Is that accurate as to where most of the folks went?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say a few went into Section 3 for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But actually they went into
Many
of the people went to other places.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some went to other sections of the benchlands. Some left the camp. I saw people leaving in cars. I did not really work with those people. I think for the most part, if they had their own cars, you know, maybe I saw as many as 2 or 3 cars. And I think those people were kind of self-sufficient, or maybe people were picking Benchland's residents up in their cars. And some people I helped, for example, I helped 2 people get their belongings out of Section 2 where they had been up onto the bike path. For one guy was there no more than an hour, and then he... transported his help, and I helped him transport to a place under the trees near Water Street, and then from there he went somewhere else, and Grayson, one of our organizers and helpers, was watching his stuff near Water Street while he was still taking his tent down and getting the stuff up to the initial platform, which was on the bike path.
Now, if you were to come back next Tuesday... or next Monday, whenever. I think it's Tuesday actually. But what would you have learned from this whole thing that you would apply and suggest you might pass on to others about how to be of help, but also just general information for folks outside who are living in the encamp.
Yeah, thank you for asking me that, Robert. I love that question because I have been studying hard and finding my own truth for years and years now as an activist and organizer and person who's wondering sometimes why I'm doing this in spite of the fact that I have my own struggles with survival and self-actualization. And I'll just say, I believe it comes down to something that you may call satyagraha. It's clinging to the truth. And the truth is about, you know, yourself alone without the help of another, whether you could use this classic example, somebody's growing my food that I eat. And so for me, the experience at the Benchlands over the last few weeks with organizing meetings starting at the Resource Center for Nonviolence and then going over into the Benchlands where we all were with you and Gloria and others who live there, meeting the residents there, experiencing their intelligence, experiencing their creativity and their beauty as people, just like I experience all over in other communities. But here, it's particularly poignant. And when I think, for example, of Perry is a resident there who came to our meeting on Saturday night, who was especially articulate, talking about how he wouldn't want to go to the armory because he knows other people like himself feel too closed in there. And he doesn't represent everybody, certainly not every homeless person. Some people want to take that armory option. But he was talking about trauma and how he feels closed in. He doesn't like the kind of regulations or the personalities like Jeremy that he might have to encounter and deal with up there. And how he would be triggered and uncomfortable and, in fact, have a horrible time up there. And I thought he was very articulate and very peaceful individual. I experienced him as.
So it's musical break time again. But before we break, here's some of the lyrics, which may be a little hard to hear. Dave sometimes slurs his words or sings fast. So here it is. This one is called Academic Boycott Days. And here are the lyrics. Up in the morning and out to school. Israel's universities are the tool. Palestinian history, they give it a pass. Too busy with jobs for the army brass. Working your fingers right down to the bone to help control the occupied zone. Ring, ring goes the bell. Village kids are in the prison cell. Discrimination at Ben-Gurion. Palestinian students almost unknown. Back in the classroom, they cook the books. Apartheid, don't know how mean it looks. Soon as 2005 rolls around, they're boycotting to bring apartheid down. You say they violate freedom of speech, but you don't practice what you preach. Up in the corner and round the bend, Palestinian freedom is at an end. Set the campus on stolen land. This is where the seizure of Palestine's planned. With the grants you love, you work for the boss. All day long, Palestinians waiting to cross. Doing demographics at HIFO-U. Better send some natives to Timbuktu. Hail, hail, brand Israel. Our prettier face must prevail. Long live Hasbara. To fool the world is the Holy Grail. Look out, they're calling us to account. Academic apartheid's beyond the pale. And those are the lyrics to this song you're about to hear, which is called Academic Boycott Days.
Up in the morning and out to school. Israel's universities are the tool. Palestinian history, give it a pass. Too busy with jobs for the army brass. Working your fingers right out of the bone to help control the occupied zone. Ring, ring goes the bell. Village kids are in the prison cell. Discrimination at Ben-Gurion. Palestinian students almost unknown. Back in the classroom they cook the books. Apartheid don't know how mean it looks. Soon as 2005 rolls around, they're boycotting to bring apartheid down. You say they violate freedom of speech, but you don't practice what you preach. Up to the corner and round the bend, Palestinian freedom is at an end. Set the campus on stolen land. This is where the seizure of Palestine's planned. With the grants you love, you work for the boss. All day long, Palestinians waiting to cross. Doing demographics at half of you. Better send some natives to Timbuktu.
Tel Aviv University has had 55 joint projects with the Army. They're located on a historic village, which is never mentioned. Technion develops drones and D9 dozers to destroy homes and studies aquifers they seize from the local farmers and residents. Israel closes down or bombs Palestinian schools at will.
Hail, hail, Grand Israel. Our prettier face must prevail. Long live Hasbara. To fool the world is our holy grail. Look out, they're calling us to account. Academic apartheid's beyond the pale.
And so, I just want to get back to this idea of, for me, what I'm experiencing in the benchlands when I'm there is what I call truth. It's about truth. It's about all I really did, anything I did, was just about helping some person move. I mean, it was that basic. It's like helping them keep their mattress so when night fell that night, and if rain fell the next day, like it was going to fall, that they might be able to get a better night's sleep, that they might actually have some shelter in the rain and not be bereft. And if not even that, it's just the emotional support. Like, you're not alone in this horror of being so demonized and so ostracized and so turned into some drug-addled monster, as these people are often portrayed as, and that I saw everything about them reminded me of other people and myself. Nothing else. The rest is delusions, it's chaos, it's human distraction. We get confused and we forget the truth. The truth is that we all need each other, and the truth is love eternal. And that's satyagraha, or to use a more American or Western idea, it's about clinging to the truth of love and solidarity and support and refusing to buy into this idea that these people are trash and they don't deserve services or support or to be
Did you form any relationships in the benchlands that you think are likely to continue simply because you like the people?
Absolutely. I formed new friendships. Some of my old friends who I've met at Huff, the home your group that meets regularly and has for years and decades. Henry, I've known for a while, and he was exceptionally strong and articulate and during our meetings, and others, some house friends showed up, other renters like Cece and our new friends who are organizers, homeless folks like Teal corrected me at one point, and Davide from Italy, and many other people, Mark, who was a resident there, and XAN, I met all kinds of new friends, some of whom I don't know their names. I met old friends who are homeless, who I've seen, and it was just a great, really, totally great experience. And my life has been so enriched by this. The struggle of organizing homeless people is particularly difficult because homeless are always having to move. And this whack-a-mole approach that we have to, as if that's a strategy to actually solve homelessness, which of course it's not, it's been so enriching for me, and I'm so fortunate to be able to work on it right here in my own backyard.
Have you come up with any modified conclusions that you're going to be using? This is really a repetition of a question I already asked you, but because I suspect I'm going to be seeing you again in these meetings, although, you know, I never expect the people that are involved to be involved tomorrow necessarily, even if they want to be, even if they have the most energy. Because many of the people, as you pointed out, are otherwise burdened, whether it's with psychological disabilities, with financial resource problems, with other family concerns they have. Or they go, students go through a period. They
they do stuff and then they go on to other things, making a million and all that sort of thing, or whatever they go do, trips to India or whatever. In other words, it isn't something I've seen that is, a lifelong career is for most people. And so it can change at any point. But based upon what kind of advice would you pass on to crews of folks who are trying to do, I guess you weren't just trying to help people, you were also trying to help people decide what they might want to do themselves, as I understand it, in terms of some people said, let's make a stand here. Others, I didn't understand, that didn't happen. But other people said, let's go make a stand somewhere else. Others said, let's do a lawsuit. And, of course, these aren't exclusive possibilities. There are all kinds of things that can be tried in conjunction. But did you learn anything that you would pass on to the next meetings? Of course, I may see you or I may not because I'm kind of health problems myself. But, you would pass on to the group or to the community generally about this situation.
Yeah, I would say to encourage self-care. I think one of the things that was great about this past weekend is Keith, who's been so overworked. I mean, that guy is, putting in so many hours, performing so many tasks. You, on the other hand, like Keith, have been involved for years and years and years, and that's pretty rare. Kevin Rothwell was there, and he's great. He contributed a lot of wisdom and kind of helped us to come down and organize our thoughts when we needed to, when we were discussing all these ideas about what we might do. At our meetings on Friday evening and Saturday evening, Kevin was very helpful. And Kevin was a part of the Freedom Sleepers, as were you. And so what I would just say to people is this is a really, really important struggle because poverty and being poor is one of the oldest scapegoats in the history of mankind. Terrorizing poor people, whether they were called vagrants in Elizabethan England or whether it was Okies back in the Dust Bowl years and the Depression era. Poor people, poverty-stricken people, poor workers have always been terrorized and demonized by the more elite echelons of government and even the anti-government type, such as, your elites who want to scapegoat these people so that they don't have to provide more reasonable solutions to humanity that are truly helpful. They terrorize these groups because they want to maintain extraordinary wealth for themselves. They want to determine policy like what's happening in Santa Cruz. So I would say, if anybody wants to know where to put any extra time or if they're looking how can they help anybody, this is for me where the church is. This is the school of good works. Even if you can only do a little bit at a time, I'm encouraging, Cece did so much work over this weekend in Red. They were there for days and days helping people move, and then they became exhausted. Cece was actually upset and crying because she just couldn't believe her eyes of what was happening to people. And after, and to be there for each other, to learn, to open your heart. It's like feeding your heart. It's like feeding yourself the true life, because underneath all this claptrap, that's life. We all exist. Somebody said it. One of the homeless people said it during our meeting. I forget which person it was. Said, we have the right to exist. Well, existence is what we all have for however much time we have it. And it's a beautiful, beautiful world. It's a beautiful planet. It's beautiful to be a human being on this planet. And if anybody wants to kick down, whether it's a couple weekends that they're free to help Food Not Bombs serve a meal or to help homeless people move their stuff and stay alive until we can find and demand solutions that are actually real solutions, like housing, basic housing, however basic, for everyone. This is a worthy struggle. And if you can do it while you're healthy, don't kill yourself to do it, because that's one of the old macho patriarchal problems that we foisted upon each other that actually hurt our movements. But do what you can while you can. There's nothing more enriching than helping people who are currently experiencing homelessness feel that they're worthwhile, feel that they have a right to exist. And that's all I'll say.
Cool. And I guess I would mention that since this is being netcast on Thursday evening, tonight actually, that tomorrow there is a meeting in the Benchlands it's now in the Phase 3 area, which is right as you go down to the second stairway, if I'm not mistaken. If you're walking from Water Street, or if you find the second stairway that leads off the path you mentioned that goes between the courthouse and the footbridge, and you come down that path, and at 5:30, it's who knows? I understand there may even be coffee there. I haven't. I'm not volunteering to bring it, and I'm not even sure I'm going to be there, because as I said, I'm not feeling so good. But some people will be, and so that's the place for folks to go who are listening and who are taking some thought from what you're saying, Elise. And it's a planning session. I like to think it's a way of also letting people know who are living in Phase 3 that they're folks who have some, not just concern, but also who are kind of raising the alarm about what's happening, that it's something that you can ignore until it hits you on Monday or Tuesday, but then come the cops and the bulldozers, which is not such an unfamiliar thing to folks who live outside, but perhaps less familiar to people in the Benchlands who've been left alone, sort of, for the last 2 years. So, yeah.
Where are you?
Where am I?
Where are you doing this newscast, Robert?
Oh, this is from, I'm doing it from a cubbyhole in Felton.
No, I mean, where, thank you. Where can we find it?
Oh, you can find this on two places. You can either go to freakradio.net at 6 o'clock on Thursday, which is too late because you'll be hearing it. I'll be playing it now. Or you can go to the archives of the Huff website. The Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and it is at huffsantacruz.org. That's H-U-F-F, Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, .org. And then you look for the name of my show, which is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides, name because on occasion I put on a bathrobe and, you know, walk around with buttons on my bathrobe suggesting that it's ridiculous that people are criminalized for sleeping and we all need to sleep and there are some people who aren't allowed to sleep. And you can find it at huffsantacruz.org under latest shows. And that.
Okay, so let me also just go back a second. You said that if you were to go to your computer and turn it on, and you were to go to, like, some search engine like duckduckgo.org, what would be the first thing that I put in to search? Would it be freakradio.net?
No, I'd go huffsantacruz.org.
So you go to huffsantacruz.org. That's the first place you go. And then from there, where would you go to hear this particular broadcast?
Then you would go to, you would look for the subsection of that. You'd be going to a website that says Huff Santa Cruz. And then part of that website is a thing called Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. That's the title of the show. And then under Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides, you would see different links, and one link would be latest shows. And when you click on latest shows, you'll get every show for the last 3 years in descending order, and you can choose whatever show you want to hear.
PM on Thursday, I take it. You're going to air this recording,
correct,
right?
In its entirety, correct.
And that would be under one of those links tonight that I would hear that at 6 p.m.? How do I hear that tonight at 6 p.m.?
Well, you can hear it at any time on those links. But if you want to hear it at 6 p.m. and you don't, have a computer, perhaps. I'm not as good about these instructions, and I apologize if I'm screwing people up. But we also netcast. We go out on the internet at freakradio.net.
Weak Freak Radio?
No, Freak Radio.
Just Freak Radio.
Freak Radio. I think it's, now, again, I never use that because I use the Huff website, but and I don't know how many people do. I think it's either freakradio.net or freakradio.org, and then you listen to it between 6 and 8, or on Sunday between 9:30 in the morning and 3:30 or 3 in the afternoon. It's a long show on Sunday. But really, the best way to do it is through the Huff website. If you can get to a computer, that's the way to do it.
Okay, but tonight at 6 p.m., when does that show on Freak Radio start tonight?
6.
It starts right at 6. Okay. Thanks for going through that. I've had a problem actually hearing the instructions on these specific things, so I hope I can take your instructions, which were pretty clear today, listen to this.
If you don't get it, just call me up and I'll walk you through it.
Okay.
And I will let me sign off so I don't phase out and burn here, and give you the last word though before I go.
No, thanks a lot for doing this media coverage. I really appreciate it. Thanks for the time to talk. And thanks for the instructions about how to listen to it. At some point, I'm really going to buckle in and try to listen to some of these wonderful interviews.
Yeah, some of them are, I think, informative.
You're better. I hope you get better soon.
Thank you, babe.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So in case that was confusing, you go to freakradio.org and you click on listen, which doesn't always work for some folks. I think you have to have a particular kind of streaming app. If that doesn't work for you, go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and click on latest shows. Or call me on the Huff line at Huff Santa Cruz. Well, call me at 831-423-4833 or 831-423-HUFF, and I'll tell you the same thing I just told you, but maybe more clearly. Here's another song by Dave Lippmann, and the lyrics are really hard to hear because he sounds like Mick Jagger. I think it's Street Fightin' Man, but I'm not sure. I've never been much of a Rolling Stones fan, but this is a satirical takeoff. I think they were trying to do a concert in Israel, and this was a critique of their deciding to go to a country which, as you can probably gather from this album, some people want to boycott and divest from. And this is a song called Human Rights Man. And these are the lyrics. Everywhere I hear my Israel concert they are thwarting, 'cause summer's here and the time is right for human rights supporting. But what can a rich boy do except to boycott apartheid? 'Cause to play in Tel Aviv would be crossing a picket line. Hey, I think the time is right to boycott occupation, 'cause in Israel the game they play is ethnic cleanse the nation. Tell me what an old boy can do when indigenous rights are banned, 'cause in groovy Tel Aviv there's just no place for a human rights man. Hey, said the time is right for BDS observation. That's boycott, divestment, and sanctions. So, hey, said the time is right for BDS observation. Y'all shout and scream, boycott, soda stream, and all apartheid servants. Tell me what a real mensch do except to sing for the dispossessed, because they've crossed the line against Palestine. No place for a rock and roll band. And here's the song as sung.
So, are we playing Tel Aviv or what?
I don't know. I got a note from Roger Waters. He said don't even go there.
Yeah, I heard a lot of chatter myself. Something about a boycott.
Yeah, so we'll use a war. Sounds dodgy.
Everywhere I hear my Israel concert, they are thwarting. The summer's here and the time is
And now we wend our way, back a week or two, maybe a little further, to Food Not Bomb's Meal, which I haven't been at for quite a while, actually, spending my time in Benchlands meetings and huddling down at home with a sniffle and a cough and a sniffle and a cough and a cough and a sniffle. Anyway, here's a few interviews from a couple of weeks ago. So it's a Food Not... Well, we'll see. You can always say no and fuck off. It's always you go, you told me to fuck off. Anyway, I'm here with a guy I know, an anonymous person for the purposes of this interview, who is a resident of one of the shelters and is talking about the vicissitudes, perhaps, we'll see if he talks about it, of caseworkers and... the problems that a resident has with dealing with the officialdom. How is the spaghetti, I should ask?
Not bad.
This is a Food Now Bomb spaghetti. How are the strawberries?
I haven't tried them yet, but they look excellent.
And pastry? My, look at that.
That looks really good.
Maybe I'll have some of that stuff. Yum, yum. I don't usually eat here. It's below my, I don't like to grovel in the dirt with the rest of you. I don't. Too true. So, are you willing to comment at all on this kind of, you can say no, you know, of difficulties that a person who's living at a shelter has or is involved in a case management system? What's the story with that?
I don't know. I feel like basically they don't really go deep enough with trying to help people with their problems with finding home.
How long have you been with this particular case manager?
This one's recent.
Do you mind not stepping on my phone?
No, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for letting me know. However rudely. Go ahead.
I don't know. You know, there's this idea of housing first, right? Which came out some years ago, and there's something right good about that. A lot of times just getting somebody into some kind of stable housing helps to solve a lot of other problems. But for a lot of people, it's deeper than that. And I don't know, I don't think they really address that. And I don't know.
So an example, perhaps, of someone you know who has a deeper problem, what would that example be that isn't being addressed that might be better if it were?
Well, there's a lot of people that have what I would generally call emotional illness, as contrasted with the usual term mental illness, which I think is kind of incorrect, and especially in my case. But there's not nearly enough service set up to deal with it. And taking care of the visible, physical, obvious part, the material, you know, the scientific part, so to speak, it's not enough, because there's a deeper spiritual reality that we all share, that we all live in and live from, and it's not being taken care of. And it's difficult for me to get pissed off about it openly, because there's a lot of nice people that work there. There's a lot of people that care, and they're basically good people, the staff and all, but it's not enough. It's not set up to help people really, really solve the problems of...
If you were to advise them as to how to deal with this situation better, what would you suggest?
I would suggest in-house counselors available for anybody who wants them, and a whole bunch of different kinds, a range and a choice. Not an assignment, but maybe like the reverse of a board review kind of interview, where, you know, they're all lined up on a table and then you're sitting in this one little chair, but the opposite, where you get to interview all of them and pick one of them. Something like that, for one thing. And people need a way to use themselves. People need a way to not only get the services or the material things that they need, but also a way to bring out of themselves when they're ready and willing and, you know, voluntarily want to. In AFC, as difficult as that program was,
Association of Faith Communities,
yeah, there was always chores, and that's a good thing, because it contributes to everyone working together and being part of like a family. And that's the thing that's missing, family. That's the big thing that's missing everywhere. You know, everybody is so fragmented, and in the land of, you know, individualism and independence, which are big idea, wonderful, good words for selfishness, loneliness, and isolation a lot of times. And not that it's all black and white. I mean, I know there is true independence sometimes, and individuation and all that, but more than anything, there's a lot of lonely, isolated people that don't have enough connections. And
how do you deal with this yourself if and when this problem comes up?
If and when, like every day?
Yeah.
I've been in like a hermit mode for a long time now, because that's one thing that those little cubicles kind of foster and are way too easy to do that with. It's nice to have a little space that you can close off and have to yourself for a while, but it's not good without enough other elements that are necessary for healthy human living. And so I read a lot. I go out and take walks. I meet people that I used to know. I feel more and more cut off from everything now. But it's good when I see people.
And the siren ambulance passes by.
They're louder and louder. They never used to be that loud. They're like, it's the world is so insane. And I don't know.
But the spaghetti isn't bad.
The spaghetti's not too bad right now.
I think I'm going to try some of that myself. We've been talking with an anonymous individual who prefers not to name himself.
Okay.
Fair enough. Thank you.
But some of the folks who have been around Food Not Bombs and Huff and maybe even the Homeless Union may know this person. I'm not going to name him, except I'm going to call him Hermit Space Hope Seeker. And we'll now get on to the next interview.
So I'm talking with, who do you want to be, how do you want to be known?
Rainbow Man.
And Rainbow Man, you say that, you see some tumultuous times coming in the Benchlands.
Not beach flats, but
the Benchlands.
The Benchlands, yeah. And the cops are kind of mouthing off to, you know, in derogatory kind of Nazi-like ways, and it's going to be a big confrontation coming.
Now, you don't live there yourself.
No.
You did bike through today.
Yeah, I sleep in a car, but I never go to the camp. There's too much.
When you went through today, what did you see?
Those containers. I saw the cops, six or seven cops, around one guy, old guy, with a cart full of bike parts. But they were all, what's the word, not degrading him, but mocking him, kind of like, you know what I mean? Going around a circle, kept mocking him. You know, where'd you steal them? Like, you opened up a bike store. There's, you know what I mean? He was like a fodder for. But just the way they were talking was like, you know, the usual abusive sort of like. But I mean, you could just tell the other people don't want to leave. Nobody wants to move out. You know, like, where are they going to go? That's the other one. They didn't give. Do you know? Is there any alternative?
Well, there's the armory, and then there's the overlook. But that's. You know,
vouchers?
No, they have vouchers, but no place to use them. I mean, that's what I hear.
Yeah, I was hoping like maybe outside of town by past Wrigley's out there, you know, where it gets real barren. Once you get past, go up, you know, Highway 1 after Western Drive, it just turns barren. It's just like desolate, nothing there, you know, flat ground. Put a bunch of porta potties out there. It's by the Homeless Garden Project out there. There's a whole area. And
they got places. They just they have their set and sort of fossilized plans that they use that they don't change, and they don't get any input from the people that they're moving around.
Yeah, it's just kind of a sad trip. But also like what's the word on the other way too? Like the people are pissed off, you know. And a lot of stuff's going on the street. They're new people. They're from there. They're not out of towners. They're coming from over there. You know, been kicked out. They're hanging on the mall a lot, but they're ornery. You know, some of the people are down and out people. Some of them are big thug-looking guys. You know, they're fucking beating people up and stuff. You know.
Now, you spend much time on Pacific Avenue?
Yeah, I'm a street performer.
How is that going?
It's going okay, but once again, it's this other infiltration. These people, all these people are moving in. You know, these crowds of people at night, panhandling stuff. Nothing against them, but I mean, it brings problems. Violence, you know, the more people the more people like on a corner trying to compete for the corners and stuff. I'm getting a lot of that. They got the stereo cranked above me, you know.
How is the community responding to your act?
I haven't been doing it as much, but they're in touch with it. There's some cool people. But what else is the other thing? I'm kind of afraid to do the Trump thing because they're like, what's it called, where they get gang up? Vigilante, you know what I mean? Hey, this guy's cutting down Donald, man. Come and get him. Shit like that's happening. They're following me, you know, these guys in a truck, big truck one night. When I was on my bike, I lost them. But, I mean, I was doing all this Trump stuff, you know, stuff, fuck Trump and making fun of him, mocking him, you know. And they're just like, they didn't like that. You know what I mean? Like, but I don't like that vigilante.
Because I like the fuck Biden stuff, too.
Well, I'm not a follower of him, but compared. And it's like, the, you know, I mean, it's like evil compared with mediocre. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Except Trump didn't do this Ukraine war shit the way he's doing.
Well, you know, you're right. That's a whole nother, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. That's a whole nother apples and oranges bit. Well, that's good for me.
Did you want to get your food?
I got my food sitting over there.
Oh, thank you, Rainbow Man.
Thank you.
Wherever, no.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
I've been making a point.
Rainbow Man is telling me that he has a place in another city where he can live, but the isolation gets to him, and he comes here for the company.
Yeah, I come here for the company. I'm not going to say the exact, but it's up north, and it's really hot, over 105, 110 degrees. It's a fire. There's two fires near where I have this new place, and it's like, what good is it in a way? Every time I leave, I got to bring everything I own with me. You know what I mean? I can't leave anything. No money hidden there. No, you know, nothing. My artwork and everything I'm writing, I'm not leaving it there. Because the town next to it, the town that last year, right near it, burned all the way to the ground. The last fire season, you know. Like it's kind of rednecky, too. It used to be a cool place. I mean, it's still kind of cool to some people, but it's really rednecky, man. Like, a lot of Trump things on trucks, you know. And if you really want to get your redneck thing on, go to Oroville. It's like you're in Oklahoma or something. Just nothing but big trucks and lots of Donald Trump signs and weird. You don't try your act up there much.
That's the other thing. They don't got a street scene. They got this few guitar guys walking around. I said to one guy, he was good. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, he was playing it. They would go to Santa Cruz, man. I've been telling them all. I told 10 different people there, go to Santa Cruz. I needed to get in here. 300 miles away, you know. I don't think they got a Greyhound bus coming right out of Chico. I don't know. That could be a determining, you know. I think they should have a little bit of a shuttle. Maybe not bring thousands of them, but in Chico, maybe about 50 or 100 people. Bring them down. And, you know what I mean? Like, because they're just sitting on a corner all day. You see a lot of the homeless people hanging out. Like, compared to here, at least people here seem, a lot of people seem to be doing shit. They're going to the beach. They're panhandling. They're doing, but in Chico, well, it's just Chico. They're just, like, sitting around, you know, by the tracks with a bottle of wine. There's no, what's it called?
Initiative? Spirit?
No, nothing.
No action?
Yeah. And there's no, downtown, they're real tight. There's no street scene at all. There's no.
How are the police?
I've seen them being assholes to people, and same thing. Maybe worse than here in a way, like just herding them in space, you know, coming and just taking all their shit and moving them to another spot, you know, and then letting them go to a place for a month or two and coming again and sweeping them out. But, yeah, it's kind of sad. I should go eat one.
Rainbow Man, thank you again. Sean. Sean, you were at the Colorado Rainbow Gathering?
Yes, the 50th anniversary of the Rainbow Family of Living Light.
And how long were you there for?
I was there for 3.5 weeks.
And have you been regularly attending these?
Yes, I have on and off been going to Rainbow Gatherings since 1984. Was my first one locally here in the 400 Liggett of Big Sur, California, and the Los Padres National Forest was my first one. So this was an accumulation of 50 years of vision and heart-centered consciousness and prayers.
Let's go over here and sit down. No, not trying to get away from you. Just trying to sit down, that's
okay.
All. So, how did this differ from the 49th?
Well, this year, due to the COVID pandemic and all that, you know, and some people, you know, believed in the fear, and others chose to gather. Some chose to own from home. Some chose to be in the woods. So the difference with this gathering is I feel like we're coming back to the circle again after the couple years of not letting people gather. So it was, I thought the energy was full force because people were ready to gather again.
How many folks would you estimate attended?
I'd say at the maximum 11,000.
And was there any interference from the authorities?
Yes, you know, as the ongoing the right to gather in our public lands issue has been, you know, and we've been to court and we've won, and they know that, and they know that we have the right to gather peacefully and enjoy our public lands, which are very, very important. And that's one of the main reasons why we do gather as well, to keep these beautiful spaces open to the public for people to enjoy and to pray peacefully. So, yeah, there was some presence, but I thought all in all, they came heavy in the beginning and they lightened up and they realized these are some loving, kind people. We don't really need to be, we need to be enforcing these you know, illegal things that are going on public land. So,
what did you learn, if anything, at this new gathering?
Well, again, it's about unity, it's about acceptance, and it's about love, and it's about coming together and working as a group as a whole to accomplish some, you know, considering we have all this, the vision in our world today. You know, we've invited members of the United Nations to Rainbow Family. We've invited chiefs from indigenous tribes to the Rainbow Gathering, and they come, and some have not come, but we still invite the House of Micah to come. In this day, we continue to pray for peace for all nations, all tribes, all races, all religions, and all creeds. So as long as there is division in our world, I think we will pray, but we will pray nonetheless anyway, because that's how we find unity, and that's part of our ceremony, is the prayer and the passing of the feather. And, you know, everybody has an equal say at Rainbow. There are no leaders. Everyone's their own leader. We respect women, children, and elders. And we pass the feather, we hold the feather, and we listen.
How many do you want to hand out?
As many as you want to give them.
So this is 100% of all that I made.
Oh, give me 50.
Well, I only made 30.
Have some propaganda.
Give me 30.
Yeah, so
hand them out around here.
All right.
Okay, cool.
And that was me agreeing to hand out flyers that Food Not Bombs and Union of the Homeless Activists Keith McHenry was handing out, urging people to come and down to the Benchlands Resistance Meeting, which was happening, I think, a couple of days beyond that. Then on this was on probably Friday the 20th or the 16th. And as I mentioned to you earlier, and this netcast is really about to end, so I just want to mention that, remind you, at 5:30 tomorrow, if you're listening to this on the 22nd, 23rd of September, at 5:30 in the Benchlands, at the bottom of the second stairway in the Benchlands, right next to the fence, there's a new and continued meeting of the Benchlands campground resistance for defending the rights of people not to be forced to move without adequate places to go. And that'll be going on at 5:30 tomorrow. I've been told the coffee will be served. I doubt I'm going to be there because I'm still just struggling with a cough and a cold and who knows what else. So I do suggest, however, you check it out. And we continue now with this interview with Sean on the Rainbow Gathering. And we've been talking with Sean.
Thanks, Sean. I got a job to do here, but
okay. And I'd like to go on about the current homeless crisis here in Santa Cruz, getting back to the need for affordable housing, the need for tiny homes, and the need for public spaces to be opened to create and counseling to help people to find spiritual motivation and dignity in our society. The current just reshuffling, but no permanent solutions, has got to stop. The rising of the $1,000 fine in Big Sur for sleeping on the side of the road, which they raised. It's an ordinance that has questionality around the ordinance, the legality of the ordinance. And this is, again, to keep people from being able to camp in their cars and camp on the side of the road.
Are you outside yourself?
Yes, I've been outside for 12 years.
And how is Santa Cruz treating you?
Santa Cruz has been fairly good to me in certain aspects. harsh in other areas. And I don't feel safe in the streets. I got people getting their tires slashed by neighborhoods saying, "Don't, you're not welcome here." There's a lot of stuff people don't know about that goes on under the sidelines with some of the community members of Santa Cruz that are against people even having a little bit of dignity or even parking on a safe street.
And again, we've been talking with
Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
Your car.